Even the deeds that Mr. Nodowski signed transferring this lot to himself and to his family refers to it as open space, two lots, two deeds. A survey that he did in 1987, for some reason, refers to this as open space. Even the zoning commission down below found that it was open space. So I want to make sure it's crystal clear. This is open space. The code today would require, I think I calculated, I may be wrong, about 7 acres of open space for this particular project. Back then in 1973, I assumed that 1.25 acre was sufficient. And it was located, the open space was located between the commercial area and the residential area. Now, Mr. Nodowski, however, although he started there is a maintenance declaration recorded that talks about maintaining the area, never did deed this to the maintenance declaration or civic association, rather. He kept it as in his name. And not only did he keep it in his name, he never took care of it. So it's an eyesore, as the commission found, because the only way, in fact, Mr. Gorecki was the president of Civic Association, testified that the only time the grass was cut was when he complained to the county, and the county would send a violation notice, and Mr. Nodowski would cut the grass. Otherwise, he never cut the grass or never did anything, just let it sit there. Down below, I actually offered to if it was left as open space, if they ruled against them, to assume the responsibility of cutting grass. Mr. Gorecki, who was the president of the Civic Association, testified that his group, they represented, wanted it as open space. In fact, they wanted to put, one of the members there wanted to put a tot lot there, which makes perfect sense in open space. So that it's crystal clear, therefore, we are dealing with open space that has been in existence in 1973, re-recorded in 1978, and every single owner that bought a lot there relied on the fact that this was 1.25 acres of open space. Now, again, it was not maintained because Mr. Nodowski refused to deed it over to the Civic Association or create a maintenance corporation, which today, of course, would be much more spelled out and much more required. It was lax back in 1973. He refused to turn it over, and he never maintained it. So now he goes around to the owners saying, rather than having this eyesore, which it is an eyesore because nobody cuts the grass, but it could be a nice place if somebody would cut the grass, and I've offered to cut the grass. Instead of doing that, he now wants to be rewarded. He now goes to them and he says, look, instead of having this eyesore, let me build a house there. And why should I be allowed to build a house there? Because of an eyesore. Well, why is an eyesore? Because I never took care of it. Of course, he never says that. So the people that they claim voted in favor of this, and that is another issue which I'll mention in a minute, they wrote letters, whoever wrote letters, saying, this is an eyesore. We'd rather have a house there. But it's only an eyesore because you let him get away with not cutting the grass. If you force him to cut the grass, or if you keep this as open space, and I will assume that responsibility, or a civic association will put a tot park there, it will be an open space that serves its purpose. But, of course, that's not, I mean, it is incredible to me that someone would say, give me a windfall, because I have violated the code that requires me to cut the grass. I violated my own maintenance declaration that requires me to civic association to do this, or maintenance corporation, as a reward for my violating the law, for my not cutting the grass, for my keeping this in this kind of a condition, as a reward for my doing this. Let me make some money on this open space and sell it as a building lot. I mean, that is frankly incredible. And this concept that the commission below found that 51% of the owners, and they really don't have 51%, but for sake of argument, assuming they do, 51% of the residents can then vote to re-subdivide and take open space and make it into a building lot is ludicrous. I mean, every single owner has a right, a vested right, in this open space. It's an amenity that went along with the plan. In order to change it, every single owner would have to agree that they don't want the open space anymore. If they have 51%, which they don't, 49% want it as open space. And it is important. But if you allow this to occur, and you allow this, make this a precedent, it's a bad precedent, because if this were to apply to everybody, the developer could come in front of you, a builder developer, and say, all right, I'm going to put 10 acres of open space there. You approve the plan, open space. He sells 49% of the homes. He still owns 51%. He then votes, as 51% owner, to get rid of the 10 acres of open space and put houses there. Now, obviously, that would be ludicrous. But this is what's happening here. I mean, supposedly 51%, which is not the case, but supposedly have said, we'd rather have a buildable lot because it's an eyesore, because Mr. Nodasky never took care of it, and he won't let us take care of it, or he won't sign the river to us. We'd rather, the other 49% say, we want a tot park, we want open space, we want trees, we want grass. Now, you may say to yourself, pardon me, why is this, why am I up here? I mean, what do I care? I really do care, because open space, frankly, open space is an amenity. It does increase the value. If it is maintained, it will increase the value. But for me, it's very important, because this open space serves as a buffer between the residential. And we bought two lots on the other side in order to have a buffer that is just vacant. And we cut the grass. It's very pretty, very nice. My concern is, and this actually backs up to the back of the shopping center. Now, Peddler's Village is an old-fashioned type of shopping center. I mean, in the back, it's got a septic field. It's got trash that the restaurants and things put out there. It's got tanks. I mean, it's not a pretty sight. It's a smelly sight, frankly. I mean, whatever what you do when you're dealing with restaurants and bars and things, you know, every day they take out their trash. The last thing I want is someone that has a home right next to where all this is, and it will be constantly complaining about the sight, the smell, this and that. And that is a concern, and a legitimate concern. And that's why there's a buffer there. And that's why there should be a buffer there. That's why there's open space there. If they put a tot park, fine. The tot park will come and play, but they're not there, you know, like a home. They're 24 hours a day. They're just, you know, the commissioners below said, well, we'll resolve that by putting a fence up. Well, a six-foot fence isn't going to stop the odor, stop the smell, and if you're on the second floor, it's not going to stop your view either. You know, so it doesn't resolve the problem whatsoever. But the bottom line is, open space is open space and can never be changed. There are cases where, for example, the city of Wilmington got parkland, and they wanted to put a water tower in the parkland. Parkland, open space, sounds pretty close to me. And the court said, no, it's parkland. You can't put a water tower there. If you look at the reason, first of all, let me make sure it's crystal clear that, as I understand the law, if you choose to re-subdivide, you are bound by the new regulations. You can't re-subdivide and say, well, I want to use something that was 35 years old. The commission completely ignored that problem or that fact. The new code would require, as I said, approximately, I calculated this roughly, and this is from memory, I may be wrong, 7 acres of open space. Basically, your code 99.21 says that for 2 to 5 density per acre, which is probably what this is, because these are small lots, 10% would be open space. And I think this is like about 70 acres, if I remember correctly. So that's why I think it's where I got 70 acres from. I could be wrong because I'm doing it from memory, but it's certainly more than 1 acre. It certainly would be much more than 1 acre today. That's the code that you that they have to abide with if they're going to do a re-subdivision. So instead of making more open space, they're completely eliminating all the open space. That's the only open space in the entire project. Now there's no open space in the entire project if this is not reversed. Now, the reasons that they give are all come down to that it's an eyesore. But it's an eyesore because he keeps an eyesore. They talk about the fact that there is open space there, but they recognize the fact that the code requires open space and the preservation of open space. But they say open space is scenic view. So they say, well, this is not a scenic view. Well, again, it's not a scenic view because he's not maintaining it, but it is open space, nevertheless. They find that the requirements of 99.9 don't really apply, which of course they apply. Every time you do a re-subdivision, you have to do it under the present code. You can't go backwards. They say that the dwelling would be better rather than the eyesore is there now. But it doesn't have to be an eyesore. If you enforce the law, it wouldn't be an eyesore. The grass would be cut as is required to be cut. I think you have 8 inches, 6 inches, whatever your code requires. So we're left with the problem that they're taking open space and they're taking away from the owners. And insofar, by the way, as 51% goes, they had 42 homeowners that signed in the last hearing in 2003, I guess. The 42 homeowners, when you analyzed it, were not really 42 homeowners because some of them were double, like husband and wife signed. Mr. Garacki, the president of Civic Association, testified at that first hearing that a lot of these signatures were not owners. They were tenants, relatives, friends that happened to be at the home, and they knocked on the door and said, would you please sign this little note that says that we can change open space for building lot? And he pointed out to them. And when we had the second hearing, and incidentally, my understanding was not that the court didn't say, go back and supplement the hearing. The court said that basically that there was sufficient facts there, so you have to have a new hearing, and they had a new hearing. But when they had the new hearing, unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize we were going to do this, they basically treated whatever happened the last hearing as part of the new hearing. So the 42 signatures, there weren't 42 signatures at all, were used as part of this 51%. They ignored the fact, even though I pointed out to them, to compare it with the list of the owners, because some people had moved. So some of the people who signed are no longer there. And I mean, their signature is worthless. But also, they're not owners, some of the people that signed. They ignored that completely. And in fact, when I pointed out to Mr. Burrell, when I wrote to Mr. Burrell and said, look, I don't want you to represent the council that 51% have signed because they haven't. He wrote back and said to me, well, I asked Mr. Lang to look at it. And Mr. Lang said that he thought there was 51%, which tells me, of course, that the commissioners never looked, never compared. I asked them to do, because obviously they're required to do. I provided them with the list. So, because if the commissioner had done it, he would have said to me, yes, the commissioner looked, but no, he had Mr. Lank look. So, but nevertheless, 51% simply is not there. But if it were there, it's meaningless. You need 100% to change open space to anything but open space. And if you allow this to happen, and of course, the court, I don't think we'll allow it, but I'd rather have you decide this than go to the court, because I think it's a bad precedent. I think you ought to govern your own county, so to speak, and enforce your own rules and your own laws. And so that's why I said, actually, frankly, interestingly, before it was reversed, Judge Graves reversed it because he said, not reversed it, but dismissed it, because he said we had not exhausted the administrative remedies. And the county and Mr. Nadowski's attorney argued that we were required to go to you first before we went to Superior Court. Supreme Court reversed that and sent it back, and then he reversed and remanded it. But then when I said, okay, you want me to go to council? I'll go to council because I prefer really to have you decide. Then the thing was, well, no, really, you can't go to council because it's only for the applicant. So I said, wait a minute, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So here we are, but nevertheless, I mean, I would really prefer that you simply set your own house in order, so to speak, because this is a bad precedent. It's illegal, and you're taking away people's property rights only to reward a person who has not abided by the law for 35 years. You should not allow that kind of windfall and that kind of reward. That's all I have to say, unless you have some questions.
Okay. Mr. Burrell, before we start too far here, in this case, the appeal is for appeal on approval. We're sitting here today as an appellate?
Correct.
So, gentlemen, I must remind my colleagues that you really can't interject your own thoughts. We have to make sure that the Planning and Zoning Commission reached their decision by the law, and really you shouldn't interject your own thoughts. And this is not a new public hearing. This is just a review of what has already been presented to public Planning and Zoning Commission.
That's correct. And in fact, I neglected to mention when we started that you have, I think Shane passed these out to everybody.
Yeah,
you have the minutes from the first commission, from the commission meeting, and then the decision which was rendered, as well as an excerpt from the plot plan and the survey that Mr. Ramuno has referred to, plus the entire record of the Planning and Zoning Commission is of course available and for your review as well.
Okay, before we get to questions from my colleagues here, Mr. Lang, we've heard a lot about the cosmetics of the property, but we're here to deal with a land use decision made by the Planning and Zoning Commission. The definition of open space, how we've gone round and round with this at the land use plan with the state and with ourselves, and I don't know if it was ever defined or not. However, in the ordinance as it was on the books when this subdivision was approved, was this lot deeded just like any other lot in the subdivision to the owner, and did he use it for just the grass to grow, a maintenance lot, the store, some building supply? What did they do with the lot at the beginning of the subdivision? And how does that pertain? That was applied then. Was there any covenants put in the application at that point that says this open space will remain in perpetuity? If that word perpetuity is not in the record, that don't mean it remains open space forever by the law.
Mr. Thaddeus Nowakowski was the developer of Fox Hollow, okay? And to my knowledge, today he still owns the property. I don't think it's been transferred to the applicant.
So it is a deeded lot in the subdivision?
It's a lot that he owns. He had never conveyed it to anyone else since he developed Fox Hollow.
So he developed the property and held on to this 1.25 acres for himself for whatever reason?
He just never transferred it to the homeowners or the homeowners association.
Did it say, is there any covenants that he had to do that, or could he maintain the lot himself? Can he just keep the lot? I mean, if I sold a subdivision,
doesn't say anywhere to my knowledge, he has to transfer it to anyone.
So we have no record that says that the lot had to be given to the homeowner association. We have no record that said that he couldn't keep it for himself.
No, he can keep it for himself, but it is labeled to be open space.
Okay.
In the original application.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ben.
Yeah, on the original, in the 1970s, it was plotted and recorded to be an open space for that project. But it's never changed hands or been transferred to the homeowners association. It's never been used for anything except a garden, according to the record by the sons of the owner.
That was my next question. Was it a numbered lot in the subdivision?
Not a numbered lot. It just said open space.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, is that why that it? I'm reading out of this record, Rick, that you sent down to us. There was a subdivision application for that one lot. So it was never part of the Fox Hollow?
It is a part of Fox Hollow. It's on the record plot of Fox Hollow. It's labeled to be open space. The ordinance allowed under re-subdivision or amendment to a recorded subdivision the right of a person to apply to subdivide for increasing density.
Was he trying to?
With 51% showing that it's of the owners so that you can apply to subdivide.
They applied to subdivide that one parcel into two lots?
Right. They want to take that open space parcel and make it into a residential building lot.
So that increases
the density for the whole project from lots to 86.
But, go ahead. George, you got any more questions?
Where's the 100%? We had a 100% requirement. Not 51%. What is the difference
In this case, because they're increasing density, they have to show they have 51% to be able to apply.
Right.
My point was that, and this is really the main point, is that open space is an amenity for all the owners that buy there, rely on it, And therefore, if you want to get rid of the open space, you need 100%. The point of this appeal, by the way, is that this is illegal. I mean, no matter how they do it, unless they get 100% of the people, it's simply illegal. If everybody agrees...
Not according to our ordinance, though.
No. Your ordinance, according to your ordinance, there is nothing in your ordinance that allows you to get rid of open space. Your ordinance allows you
to...
It says
if you're going to increase density, it's 51%. Am I
right,
correct?
But you don't use open space to increase density. I mean,
that's a debate whether we're sitting here arguing, is that open space or not open space?
No. It's found to be open space. He's told you it's open space. And by the way, it was deeded...
I'm not going to argue. We're just listening. Lawrence, I got a couple questions. I hate to cut you off, sir, but I'm going to ask Mr. Lang.
All right, sure.
You said it is recorded as Lawrence and the plot plan as open space.
Right. No question about it.
That's
under present,
okay.
Under present
and,
recorded
and
plot.
And is it zoned AR or?
MR.
MR.
Medium density residential.
That's the zoning for it.
It would rezone.
So it has a zoning, even though it's labeled, it has a zoning for multi-housing, right?
No.
Or just
medium density
housing.
Residential is single family, and it's a recorded parcel within a subdivision. It's labeled to be open space.
Okay, and Mr. Rogers, you said it does not have a number.
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Number as a lot.
No.
Mr. Okay. Burrell, your interpretation of legal counsel, the word open space attached to a subdivision, we've had subdivisions in the past that had open space that came back in where, say, I acquired it after it was all built. And I wanted an open space lot for stormwater management or for a sewer plant, generation plant or whatever. And we have dealt with that. In this case, and the word perpetuity means forever, is not in the record. How do you interpret that word open space as having teeth to make it maintain and keep that status?
I'd have a hard time answering that, Mr. Rogers. I just don't sit with you every week, and I'm not familiar with your discussions on it. I mean, the P&Z made some findings as to its interpretation of open space, and of course that's where your ordinances start with respect to zoning anyway.
Right.
I think you have to make that determination.
When something gets recorded and gets that official seal of approval, how binding is that? It's pretty binding, isn't it? Once there's been a recorded plot plan?
Typically, when you buy property, whether it's a recorded subdivision, condo, whatever, you're held to the restrictions that are on record at that time. Now, in many instances, those same restrictions permit amendments. For example, in a subdivision, might tell you need 2/3 of the owners to do that. But there is some basis for assuming when you buy into any kind of a subdivision that what's on record is what you're going to have, unless there's some provision right there that allows for amendments.
Well, we've had a debate here recent about in subdivision. That are applied for that, and it's kind of like subliminally in the ordinance that or in the application that is, say, if I bought a property on a main street and it told me there's going to be open space in front of my house, but down in all the dialogue it says if it's not developed within 4 years it can revert back to the developer for development. And in this case, we were debating that quite a bit here in the past recently on the land use plan. But my concern is how binding is just the word open space on record versus what he's allowed the property owner is allowed to do with the zoning and classification to the property. That's my concern. I mean, what's your?
Well, wouldn't that be Mr. Burrell's?
That's what I asked.
He should answer that. I don't think Lawrence has got the ability to say how binding something is. It would be a legal interpretation, I guess, from our legal counsel. On.
He might need some time to do that, but.
That's
something we'd have
to look at. I got one more question.
Let's ask one more question.
Did you the look at the names of the subdivision that were to have to be, were they verified? Or did you look at it?
We spent, I would say, hours trying to, for one thing, read the names because it's a petition with signatures, which Mr. Romano can probably vouch for. They're really hard to read and understand who they are. We did find some duplication on the first list from the 02 public hearing.
Okay.
Whereby a husband and wife signed on separate lines, and looking at names, start counting names. And whether or not we had a full 51% is questionable, but you're dealing with 51% of owners, not 51% of 85 lots.
Right.
They only get one vote. If they have multiple lots, they only vote once.
I understand
that. That becomes a question of who owns what. And looking at the list for the 05 public hearing, we had more than 51%, but I will admit, there were seven additional petition signatures signed in form letters, that would bring the numbers up over 51%.
51% in favor of what?
Of allowing the sub.
Of converting the lot to
a. Of converting a lot.
They're actually allowed to even come to the public hearing.
Has your question been answered?
It looks like 53.6% is what it would come out to.
Okay.
Mr. Phillips, you have a question?
Now, the whole 51% is really regarding the affording of a public hearing.
Right.
That's correct.
Okay.
Exactly.
But
correct.
They don't necessarily agree that it's a good thing, but says that they have to have 51% to simply go to public hearing.
Correct.
Okay.
So you have to say 51% acknowledging that you're proposing to apply and don't disagree, basically.
Right.
To a public hearing.
To go to public hearing.
Correct. Not to agree that they
approve it.
Any further questions, Mr. Marino?
Well, yes. Again, I think we changed the code during my tenure to take it from 100% to change any recorded plat
down to 51
simply to allow the issues to be on the table. Just because there's 51% that signed a petition doesn't mean that it needs to go through. I mean, 49%.
Let me just read what's in the code right now.
Okay.
Okay. And this has been there since 01, which was before this process started. In the event the proposed re-subdivision or alteration results in increased density within the subdivision, the subdivider shall provide evidence that not less than 51% of the property owner's consent to the application.
Okay.
So like I said, we had 53.6% based on the 05 hearing, not knowing that we had mixed signatures on the first application.
So regardless of whether or not a recorded subdivision has the weight of law from a permanent standpoint, this amendment to our code overrides any of that legal weight. We basically said, as a body, we can change a legally recorded subdivision going through this process. Now, the question is it an appropriate change?
For years, we had to
change vested rights.
We had the same opinion, somewhat as what Mr. Romano said earlier, in that open space is open space, and once it's recorded on a plot, it's open space. But when the ordinance was changed and to create the subdivision regulation to allow for re-subdivision alterations, it came up at a 51%, which gives the person the right to at least apply.
Is there any further question, Mr. Romino?
And then they applied and they got it approved to do something with the lot. Is what the next?
The commission, based on their finding, the page and a half or whatever it is, they felt it more appropriate to be a residential lot than an open space.
And the homeowners association is there is one, but it doesn't meet. Or what is it?
Not active.
It's not active. Has it ever been active? Does anybody know?
Was there? My knowledge.
It was reason that it wasn't. It stated in here somewhere. I read that it's not active because there was nothing to maintain. So they've never.
This is true. The streets are dedicated to public use and maintained by the state.
No. He's talking about maintaining like open space.
No, I'm just saying. Let me finish. The streets are maintained by the state. The rest of the property was commercial, and then the open space parcel. There really wasn't anything else that the landowner would maintain.
But they never maintained. Okay. The homeowner association never maintained or did maintain this.
The homeowner never. I would say the homeowner association never maintained the homeowner never maintained the lot.
Okay. Never owned it.
It was still Mr. Nowakowski's property.
Romano.
Okay.
I think it would be appropriate at this point then to hear whether or not
your testimony. We will move on.
Whether or not the applicant. I know the applicant's representatives are here. I don't know if they intended to address council or not, but we
should
ask. Do you
finish your testimony, Mr. Romano?
Yes.
Okay. Let's move forward with public hearing.
Is there a representative from the original applicant that wishes to address council?
Yes, I was there at the first hearing. Ted Nowakowski, Jr. Good morning, guys.
Give your address to Ted.
4 South Lake Terrace, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. There have been a lot of things Mr. Romino has kind of forgot to tell you guys. I have always kind of disagreed with Lawrence.
Sir, would you, sir, would you stand at the podium?
I just wanted to share this with you guys. As far as this being a piece of personal space, this piece of land, when this subdivision was done, was a piece of land that was set aside for the Nowakowski family. When we built this subdivision for over 2 years, all the topsoil and all the fill dirt that was stripped off this piece of land was stockpiled there. My father sold this dirt, so to speak, over the next 2 or 3 years. I always, when he had a grocery store there, had
this in tomatoes, so on and so forth, which we turned around and sold. After that, I ran my firewood business for years off that piece of land. Mr. Ramuno, one of the big things which he forgot to tell you guys, has three times made offers to buy this piece of property.
Mr. Nowotowski, I don't
want
to interrupt.
Well, it definitely has something to do here.
Listen, it may have had bearing at the Planning and Zoning Commission.
But it doesn't have a bearing here?
This is not an entirely new hearing. Whatever was said down there is done, and the council will review the record from that hearing. Okay. But what we would prefer that you do here, sir, is simply address the findings of the Planning and Zoning Commission and explain to the council why you believe that was correctly decided. I assume that's your position. This isn't an evidentiary hearing. We're not here for new testimony and so forth.
So as far as it being treated as a subdivision, it should be treated as my father being able to liquidate a piece of property which he has paid taxes on since 1973. That's over 30 years, guys. The tax bill which I gave you says Thaddeus E. and Janet Nowakowski. In none of the original covenances, which people bought lots from, the restrictions, which I'm sure Mr. Chasnoff is going to come up with, was there ever a mention that this 1.2.5 acres was to ever have been conveyed to the homeowners. That piece of land belonged to the Nowakowski family.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Is it being taxed as a residential lot? Or
as a vacant lot is what the tax bill said that I just gave Mr. Rogers. When the state of Delaware, we always had a drainage problem at that end of the development, when the state of Delaware wanted to come in and dig an easement, they came to my father to get permission to dig that easement. So that tells me, if he's paid taxes for over 30 years, the state comes to him. If the grass isn't cut, the sheriff comes to him, sends him a letter, I have to go take care of it. But that piece of land is our piece of land.
Question for one of the planning and zoning guys. A piece of open space, designated open space in the Peninsula subdivision, does it receive a tax bill like that?
But to who?
Same rate. There's not a different rate for a unbuilt residential lot versus a piece of open space that's going to remain open space in perpetuity.
It doesn't say vacant lot on it.
We can't respond to what the assessment office does, but there should be an assessment. It would be a lower rate than what a typical residential assessment would be, but it would be up to the board of assessment. Really can't.
But this
all parcels
is, this
are assessed, supposed to be assessed.
This is assessed as a buildable lot, but yet still vacant.
Oh, I don't know how it's assessed.
$31.
Well, I paid a. This is 1996, Vance. It's stamped here.
It's they're all the same.
Thing.
And it says $7.79 is the county tax. School tax was about $31. Total of $39.23. Okay. So I guess a vacant lot didn't mean it was a residential. It didn't have the same assessment that the rest of the lots in Fox Hollow would have, Lawrence, is it?
I would assume not.
It seems that way from these
numbers. That would be something we have to talk.
It's typically it's less.
Considerably less is what you think?
Typically it's less because it's not a buildable parcel as far as residential use or any other activity.
Right. I understand. It'd be almost classified as they are.
I don't know how the rates work.
It'd be like an ag piece of property for almost like
it. It could be.
But it wasn't
assessed at $1,750.
Beg your pardon?
It's assessed at $1,750. And we can check the assessment records to see how they arrived at that.
Yeah.
That might be helpful. I guess one thing. Thank you, Lawrence.
You need to go back.
You have to.
You need to.
Sure. No, that's. We have plenty. I've got plenty of them in this file.
When people come in for a subdivision application, they've got to sell it to this body and to people in the community. And one of the sales instruments is open space. And they say, look at our plan. We've got all this open space.
Correct.
And so it pacifies the objections.
Right.
Is it possible that it was used to pacify objections?
In 1973, as I told the zoning board at the first hearing, Gene Littleton, who you guys probably know, you know, local surveyor's been here forever and ever. Gene put open space on that piece of property. There was no such thing in 1973 in Sussex County as open space like there is today. I mean, I'm in the landscape and irrigation business. Every big subdivision I do, that's all I do is I landscape all of this open space to pacify you guys, to pacify the people who don't want to see development, so on and so forth. Back then, we didn't have to pacify anyone. That was our piece of property for our family. And then all of a sudden, I'm not allowed to say that. But anyway.
Just don't go beyond what you said before.
All of a sudden, because my father, quite frankly, would not agree to sell that piece of property to Mr. Remuno, and then he since, in later years, did decide to sell this piece of property. That is what this whole four-year process, quite frankly, guys, is all about.
Anything else, sir, or anything that you wanted to address that the commission itself determined? Again, we don't want to hear new evidence.
Well, I really think the commission, you know, they asked a lot, especially the first hearing. I was not at the second hearing. My father and my sister were there. But they asked a lot of really pointed questions.
Okay, well, if you weren't at the second hearing, then you probably can't really address what was said there.
But okay.
If you have legal type of arguments as to the validity of the commission's decision, you can make those, or you've mentioned that you have an attorney here, and I don't know if you intended to have them address
counsel.
Yeah, I believe
counsel, Mr.
That would probably be more appropriate, since this is pretty much a legal hearing. Counsel for the Nowotowski family?
Yeah, my name is Bill Chasnov, and I'm here for the Nowakowskis. And I did not attend the hearing, but I reviewed the notes that were there, and it's basically our position that is a legal matter. I mean, there were 12 different reasons that were given at the hearing that was held back on October 27th, 2005, as to why, in fact, their application should be granted, and we concur with those 12 reasons. We think that the recommendation also takes care of the existing problem that may be that Mr. Remuno referred to when he was talking, because between the commercial property and the slot, there's to be a 6-foot fence, which is then going to stop all the debris and the trash from his properties from coming over. That's the main reason for the fence, from all that debris and trash coming over onto this lot, which will now be converted into a residential lot. So we think the planning and zoning, you know, took into account how many people had signed the signature, that they properly addressed the issues. They gave 12 reasons as to why they were approving it. We agree with those 12 reasons, and the restrictions that they placed we felt were reasonable conditions for them to place on granting their permit.
Thank you. Okay. It is a public hearing, and I think we do need to ask if there are members of the public who wish to weigh in on the issue one way or the other.
Yes.
Again, the comments would have to be limited, though, as to the how you feel about the commission's decisions. Anyone? All right. Hearing no hands, I think it'd be fair to offer the applicant or the appellant a brief rebuttal if he has any. If not,
well, just briefly. I mean, we go back to the bottom line that people buy, they see open space, they rely on it, they invest right in it. And you simply cannot change unless everybody agrees, because otherwise it would allow, as I said, a builder to come in after selling to 49%, and they come in and say, gee, we have all this wonderful open space. He comes in with his 51%, because he still owns 51%, and do it. That's ludicrous. And this, frankly, crap about buying and selling is crap, but I don't even want to go into it.
Just a point of clarification. I believe it was said by the Director of Planning and Zoning that one vote per person. Even if you own 10 lots, you get one vote.
I'm not sure.
The developer could not do what you just surmised.
I'm not sure that's correct. But even if you use that, they still do not have 51%. They actually represented at the hearing that they had 60%. Now they're down to 53.6. They do not have 51%, even if you use that, because there are several people that signed that are not owners, And I agree with him. Sometimes it's difficult to read who owns it. But the ones that you can make out clearly show that quite a few of them you wouldn't count. You shouldn't count because they're not owners. And I've asked the board, frankly, to do that, but apparently they didn't do it. But it was represented to the board that there was 60%. But, of course, now we're told it's 53.6.
Yeah, but that, sir, you understand that only does allow you to write to a public hearing.
That's all it does.
That's all it does.
Well, it does. I understand.
That's cool. Okay.
But it doesn't allow you to take away my right to a vested right that I have to amenity.
No, it doesn't do that, but it also, it just allows a public hearing to allow both sides to speak, which
right. We've done
has
that.
Happened. All there was.
I don't think you have a vested right in amenities.
I do have a vested right in open space. Because in the open, I mean, and by the way, if you say that you planted tomatoes there, whatever you say, that's fine. You can do that in open space. I mean, you just can't build in an open space. So I mean, you can keep an open space as long as it's open.
Sir, okay, thank you.
Mr. Burrow.
All right, that would conclude then the public hearing, on the appeal this morning, Mr. President.
Yeah, I think with the questions you've been asked and the information that's been placed before us for this appellate hearing, that we need to go in the direction of referral at this time.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Phillips, second by Mr. Jones to defer on appeal number 2002-39 subdivision. Any questions? Mr. Pohl?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Jones. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now we'll move on. And
way behind now.
Mr. Izzo, come forward, please.
All right.
Morning, Mike.
Thank you.